So Arctic is a very high-grade copper deposit. Based on the pre-feasibility study results from last year, the project NPV on an 8% discount basis, this is post-tax, is $1.4 billion and a 33% IRR. So very solid economics. The cash cost to produce a pound of copper is about 15 cents net of the byproduct credits. There are very few copper projects in the world today that would make any money at $2 copper. Cash cost is about almost $1.60 on a worldwide average, and then when you put in your sustaining costs and your all-in costs, you're over $2. So very few mining operations would be making money at $2 copper in today's world. This one would on a copper basis. You'd still have $1.85 of margin. It's a heck of a project. Just very, very high quality, and of course there's a whole district there. Which we're exploring, so we know we can find more ore.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning in to Mining Stock Education. I'm Bill Powers, and I'm pleased to bring to you another CEO Spotlight interview as we profile our new sponsor, Trilogy Metals. Trilogy is advancing extremely high-grade copper-dominant polymetallic projects in Alaska. Trilogy trades in New York and Toronto under the ticker TMQ. There's approximately 132 million issued and outstanding shares, and the company currently has a market cap of approximately US 330 million. I'm speaking today with Trilogy's president and CEO, Rick Van Nieuwenhuis. Rick has 40 plus years experience in the natural resource sector, years of experience and knowledge and success working in Alaska. He's managed projects from grassroots discovery up through advanced feasibility, production, and even closure. With that being said, Rick, thanks for coming on the show to give us an overview of Trilogy.
Pleasure to be here, Bill.
Well, you've had, as I mentioned briefly, much success in Alaska. In fact, I was listening to a recent interview that Rick Rule did with you, and Rick actually commended you and said for the last two decades you've made him and his clients a lot of money. And how were you able to do that? What company were you working with? And talk about some of your success in Alaska so far.
Yeah, so I'm an exploration geologist by background, and I had worked many years for the major companies and ended my career with the majors working for Placer Dome as a VP exploration. I formed my own company after Placer. I called it Nova Gold, and we ended up making a huge discovery, gold discovery in Alaska called the Donlin Gold Project. It contains about 40 million ounces of gold, and we've managed to move that project all the way through through getting our federal permits just recently here. So very proud of that one. We formed a 50-50 partnership with Barrick Gold. A lot of history and a lot of ups and downs, of course, in over that 20-year period. But it's a 50-50 joint venture with Barrick Gold now, and with permits in hand, and looking at building what will probably be one of the largest gold mines in the world when the price of gold gets in a better mood. So that's that's a bit the history with Nova Gold, and of course we spun Trilogy Metals out of Nova Gold, and myself being an exploration geologist and myself and my team basically came over to Trilogy to work on the Ambler assets, and which we now call the Upper Kobuk Mineral Projects. So that's the short history of where we've come from.
And you're from Alaska originally, aren't you?
Yeah, I grew up in Alaska. I'm actually born in Belgium, but grew up in Alaska. So I've worked all over the world. When I was VP exploration for Placer Dome, I literally was in charge of Africa and Asia, so I've certainly traveled around the world a lot, and got to understand how to do business with lots of different groups, and but always had a soft spot in my heart for Alaska, and so we went back up there with Nova Gold and now Trilogy, developing what I think is going to be a world-class mining district, not just a single property, but a whole district.
Let's talk about your share structure. I mean, you have a very strong institutional backing. Can you give listeners an overview of the share structure and who owns the shares?
Yeah, so roughly 135 million outstanding shares traded in New York and Toronto under TMQ, as you mentioned. We are probably about 70% institutionally held. Mostly New York funds, some in London and some in Hong Kong, not much in Canada. About 5% is held by management and directors, with myself owning about 3% of that. So, and these are shares that I bought in the market. So, because these were spin-out shares from Nova Gold, of course, I got some of my position from my my position in Nova Gold, but then I've also purchased in the market about a year and a half ago. I purchased about 1.5 million shares in the market. So, these weren't gifted or anything like that. So, yeah, no, we feel well compensated, and we got a strong management team that certainly is well motivated.
Let's talk about your burn rate and how you're funded. I guess we could start, a good way to do that would be a talk about your partnership with South 32.
Yeah, so we'll high level, we've got $30 million of cash in the bank today. We have $10 million. These are all U.S. numbers. $10 million of warrants that are deeply in the money. So those will be exercised sometime between now and July. Early July is when they expire. So that brings in another $10 million. So we are spending South 32's money on our $10 million bornite exploration program. So we've got sort of three projects we're working on right now, all in the same area, but we subdivide them. Bornite is is where we're doing the largest exploration program, roughly a $10 million program. That's being funded by South 32. And then at Arctic, which is the most advanced project, it's one we're working on the feasibility on right now, and it's a $7 million to complete the feasibility study by February of next year, 2020. That we are funding. And so that comes out of the 30. And then we've got a joint district exploration program that we've funded 50-50 with South 32 on exploring the rest of the Ambler District. The exploration program there is starts with a helicopter survey, electromagnetic survey, which we're just completing now. Should be completed in by the middle of next week, probably. And then we'll have followed up with the drilling program. So, if I kind of add up all the numbers, the pluses and minuses, we'll end the year with probably somewhere in the $23, $24 million in the bank neighborhood. And, of course, at the end of the year, South 32 has to make up their mind on an option to form a 50-50 joint venture with us by contributing $150 million plus matching what we spend at Arctic. So, we don't need to raise any cash until we decide to build a mine.
There's a lot of protection against the downside of dilution that investors always worry about.
Exactly. We really don't have a need for any additional mine. On the assumption that South 32 exercises their option, which frankly I can't believe that they won't, then the $150 million is more than enough money to complete the feasibility and permitting at Arctic, complete feasibility at and permitting at Bornite, and continue to do exploration in the district over the course of the next 5 years. And our burn rate, our residual burn rate, if you will, for Trilogy, because we're spending all of South 32's money at that point on the project, our burn rate for Trilogy is probably less than $3 million a year. That's what it takes to run the rest of the company, if you will. Mm-hmm. So with the 25 some odd million dollars in the bank at the end of this year, $24-25 million will be in, we can run the company a long time on that. So yeah, no need to raise cash until we decide to build what's going to be a very, very high quality mine.
There is an international listenership to this podcast, but the majority of listeners are in Canada and the U.S. So could you talk a little bit about South 32 and just how well capitalized and even profitable they are? Because it seems to me that they would be the logical potential person that would buy out the other 50% of your company if you get to that point.
Yeah, down the road, certainly that's a possibility. So South 32 is, they were spun out of BHP about maybe 5 years ago now. They generate about $1.5 billion of free cash flow a year from operations. They produce a lot of thermal and met coal, have an integrated aluminum business, integrated manganese business. In fact, I think they're the largest manganese producer in the world, which of course is an important battery metal. And then they have zinc, nickel, and a couple of other miscellaneous commodities. So they produce a lot of things except copper. And, of course, that's why they're invested in us. We are developing what is primarily a copper-rich district, and certainly the grades at Arctic and Bornite demonstrate that not only are they copper-rich, but they're high-quality copper projects. So they're that's Sal 32 background. They recently purchased Arizona Mining last year for I think $1.6 billion U.S. That's a zinc project in Arizona, the Hermosa project in southern Arizona. So they've been quite active. They clearly like the United States as a place, as a destination to do business. I think they like the surety of ownership, the rule of law, and the low taxes. I think all those are reasons why people are you're seeing people make big investments like that in the United States right now.
A question that Rick Rule teaches investors to ask is, what's your current liquidation value versus your market capitalization? Your market capitalization is around 330 to 340 million U.S., just as I'm looking at it here on my screen. If you had to sell off your assets, including your cash, what do you estimate the liquidation value of Trilogy is currently?
Yeah, I think there's obviously a variety of ways you can address that. We have $30 million of cash, so that there's a number that's there. We'll have another $10 million here at the end of July. I think the other metric that I would point to is the 32 option of $150 million to buy 50%, which says the entire project is worth $300. So I think that's what's being reflected in our current market cap is largely the downsides protected. And then the value that we add with the 150 that Sal 32 puts in, should be accretive to the current value of current market cap of the company. That's the way I look at it.
All right. Could you give us an overview? Your Arctic project is your most developed project. You did a pre-feasibility study, which you published last year. Give us a snapshot overview. What are the economics there?
So Arctic is a very high-grade copper deposit. Based on the pre-feasibility study results from last year, which was completed by some, first-tier engineering companies, Ausenco, Wood Engineering, and SRK. So the project NPV on an 8% discount basis, this is post-tax, is $1.4 billion and a 33% IRR. So very solid economics. Basically, the initial capital is about $780 million, so a modest amount of upfront capital on a dollar per annual ton of copper produced. We're about $6,000 per ton, whereas the industry average is about 18, so about one third the amount of capital to produce an equivalent ton of copper. So Very good position to be in, and certainly an era when we have sort of a capital constraints that we have in our business. A couple of other metrics: the cash cost to produce a pound of copper is about 15 cents net of the byproduct credits. You're producing about 160 million pounds of copper a year, about 200 million pounds of zinc, 30 million pounds of lead, about 3 million ounces of silver and 30,000 ounces of gold. So it's a mixed metal production. It's a polymetallic deposit. We're producing three concentrates, a copper, a zinc, and a lead concentrate. The copper and the zinc concentrates are getting over 90% recovery and a 30% copper con and close to a 60% zinc con. Your lead concentrate is the value in the lead is really in the precious metals. You're getting paid for both your gold and your silver there. It's a heck of a project, just very, very high quality. And of course, there's a whole district there, which we're exploring, so we know we can find more ore.
And what was amazing to me, too, is the payback period. It's such a big project and a payback period in 2 years.
Yeah, it's 2 years. You're generating $450 million of free cash flow a year. So the initial capital at $780, you pay that back in less than 2 years. And your sustaining capital and closure costs are another $60 million each. So not, They're not big numbers. It's not a big mine. It's a modest sized mine. It's a 10,000 ton a day operation, which, you know, it's not small, but it's, you know, it's not a big, huge, low grade porphyry that are, you know, running in the 100 or 100,000 plus. It's 1/10 the size of those. So just the grade makes you produce a fair amount of metal.
And your base case metal prices, you use $3 copper. Copper, as we talk, is about $2.72. What would the payback period be if we were looking at $2 copper?
Your payback period would go up to about 3.5 years. There are very few copper projects in the world today that would make any money at $2 copper. The cash cost is about almost $1.60 on a worldwide average, and then when you put in your sustaining costs and, you know, your all in costs, you're over $2. So very few mining operations would be making money at $2 copper in today's world. This one would. It would double your payback period, but you'd still have on a copper basis, you'd still have $1.85 of margin.
And we're talking about the economics and talking about this project verbally, but I've actually seen this project through the technology you had at the PDAC, where I put on the headset and the virtual reality gaming software flew over the deposit. It's actually an open pit deposit, isn't it?
Yeah. So the virtual reality is pretty cool. You really get a sense of the layout of the project and the scale of the project. And it is an open pit, and that's, I think, what's somewhat unique of this type of deposit geologically. Typically would be an underground mine, or at least most of it would be underground. But it's in a geometry where it actually dips with the hillside, so we're able to just kind of take a scallop off the hillside and mine it with an open pit. So very, very, very advantageous. It's a much better open pit mine than it is an underground mine. You could mine it underground, but it would cost more and over a longer period of time. So from a net present value basis, you're much better off going with the open pit.
You mentioned that you're doing a lot of exploration at the Boronite project. Can you give us an overview of the Boronite project? What's happening there, and what pounds in the ground do you have right now?
Well, so at Boronite, we've been spending exploration dollars from South 32 for the last 2 years, and again, we'll repeat that this year for a total of $30 million, and this is an option payment basically that they paid to us as part of the deal that we signed with them going on 3 years ago now. So again, the option is that they maintain the option by spending the dollars, and they have the right to form a 50-50 joint venture by contributing $150 million and then matching what we spent at Arctic. What we have discovered to date, and this is before the expenditures from South 32 on Boronite, what we had spent money on previously was developing a resource of about 6 billion pounds of copper and 77 million pounds of cobalt. So it's a different geology than Arctic. We're dealing with a carbonate replacement style deposit here. It's also very good grade. We're looking at 1% in the open pit. We have about 125 million tons outlined in the open pit at 1%. And then the ore body continues where you would mine it from an underground, with an underground mine at a higher cutoff, obviously. And the resources there are 58 million tons of 3%. Now, that's prior to the $30 million that we've spent on it. And at the end of this year's program, we'll tally up all the drilling, which will be over 30 holes, probably about 30, close to 35 holes that we've drilled since the resource was updated. And this has been a combination of infilling holes and step-out exploration holes. So we certainly expect to improve the overall resource, both in terms of the quality of inferred versus indicated, but also in terms of size as well. So it's a much bigger scale project than Arctic, almost an order of magnitude, but a very, very exciting project in its own right. 1% open pit copper is about twice the grade of that being mined on average around the world today in open pits, and a 3% underground grade is a better grade than Arctic, so in terms of copper. So very, very high quality project in its own right. Just a little earlier stage, so I think It's probably 5 years behind Arctic in terms of its development profile, but very exciting.
Rick, avid resource investors that are listening to us now know of Northern Dynasty's issues there in Alaska and the resistance to environmental issues with that project. Are there any such things occurring with your projects, and what would be some things that keep you up at night?
Yeah, so, I mean, we've really mitigated a lot of the risks here by having a business partnership with an Alaska Native Corporation. It's called NANA. They own the Red Dog Mine. It's operated by Teck. I think currently that's a 65-35% joint venture, with NANA increasing their ownership to up to 50% in the next several years. So that mitigates a lot of the issues around developing a project. When you're partnered with a native corporation who specifically selected their land for mining, and that's really the history here. When the Alaska Natives settled their Aboriginal rights and title settlement with the federal government, they had the right to select land. And, of course, the federal government and the state government took all the land with the potential for oil and gas. That was the first thing that happened. So the next opportunity for the Natives, to Alaska Native, to select land meant that, you know, the oil and gas was gone. It was about minerals. And so they selected these lands specifically for mineral development. So that makes for a good partnership, and NANA has a lot of history because of the 30 years of operation at Red Dog, so an excellent partner. And that frankly, is the main one of the big differences with the other project, and that mentioned Pebble.
And your road, that's one of the key things you're looking at right now, the approval for your road to your project?
Yeah, and we just had a great update yesterday. This project is in the middle of nowhere. We're about 200 miles from the existing infrastructure in the state of Alaska, which is the Dalton Highway. This is the highway that goes between Fairbanks and the oil fields in the North Slope of Alaska. So the state has proposed, through a group called the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority, they're essentially a state-owned infrastructure bank. Their job is to build infrastructure through public-private partnerships. So they've been working on the permitting of the road for the last several years, and just yesterday, the Bureau of Land Management, which is the lead federal agency from the federal permitting side, issued the dates for completion of the draft EIS, which is July 19th, with a 45-day comment period, and the EIS to be finished by the end of October. So that's It's nice to get those timelines finally settled. They've been working, of course, on putting the draft EIS together, and then you know it's going to be done when they put a date out like that. So we're very excited to see the draft go out. Obviously, we'll be providing our own comments, as will NANA and the other stakeholders. We've been working, you know, hard behind the scenes to explain to everybody what the road is about, and how we can operate in a similar fashion that Red Dog's been operating for 30 years without having any substantial impacts to caribou or the fish or the environment, both air quality and water quality. So mining has a pretty good track record in Alaska, and we can certainly be able to address the concerns in a manner where we're minimizing any impacts to the environment.
In the approval for the road, the environmental impact statement for the road, that is obviously a huge catalyst within the next year. What would be some other key catalysts or value drivers for the company as we conclude?
Yeah, the road EIS is a huge value driver. I mean, it clearly just opens up the district. The other big drivers, I think the next big one is really the South 32 option decision that puts $150 million in the joint venture company treasury, and that's the next spend for, you know, the next 5 years, basically. I think that's why we don't need to raise any additional funds, and so no further dilution, you know, necessary until we decide to build a mine. So those are the two big ones. Obviously, we're doing a fair bit of exploration this year, so we'll have updated exploration results for bornite, clearly, both drill results and then a resource update, and probably next year a preliminary economic assessment on bornite, so we can give the market a value metric for bornite. We'll be exploring in the district, which I'm really excited about. We're just completing a helicopter EM electromagnetic survey of the entire Ambler district. It's about 100 kilometers in length. So we know we have a dozen other known prospects, VMS projects out there, volcanogenic massive sulfide projects. But the EM survey is going to light up, no doubt, a number of other new targets that will present themselves. So we'll have about a $2 million exploration, drilling exploration program and some results out on that as well this year. And, of course, finishing up the feasibility at Arctic is we think is another huge value driver. So lots of news flow this year. There's certainly a lot of potential catalysts, and as I said, the big one is the record decision is when you get your approval from the federal government to build the road, and then of course the South 32 option. Those are the two big ones, big drivers.
Trilogy Metals trades, as I mentioned, in New York and Toronto under the ticker TMQ. To learn more, you can go to the Trilogy's website at trilogymetals.com, and I encourage you to go there. On the homepage at the bottom right, there is a video, an overview video that you've heard our discussion today, but you can actually see it visualized through computer animation, both the Arctic deposit and how the company, through their pre-feasibility study, has laid out how they will process and then transport the ore. So it gives you a great overview. And if you're new to mining investing, you want to go to Trilogy's website and watch the video, just because it will teach you the process. And it's just a perfect depiction of the outcomes of the pre-feasibility study that was completed last year. Check out the company. Great projects, copper dominant. I expect a rising copper price, but you're also exposed to cobalt, lead, zinc, precious metals. A great partner, a lot of exploration upsides. Trilogy has a lot going for them. Well, Rick, I appreciate you giving us the overview, and I look forward to catching up and getting some updates with you from you later in the year.
Well, perfect. Bill, thanks very much. And we've got a lot going on this year, so we'll look forward to updating you and your audience on Trilogy's efforts to advance the development of the Ambler Mining District.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature, and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.